The Journey Into Podcast Patreon is proud to present this Star Trek podcast, where Marshall Latham and Keith Teklitz go where many Star Trek fans have gone before, talking endlessly about the Star Trek franchise. Please come and join us as we go trekking. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Trekkin', where Keith Teklitz and I, Marshall Latham, talk about Star Trek. We are here this time as one of our special movie episodes. These episodes go out to everybody on the Journey Into feed, not just on Patreon. So we're glad to include everybody in this episode. We've been on a trek of our own to get through all of the Star Trek series. And we're almost done. We have two left before we go around the horn again and finish up season one of all of the different Star Trek series. So we're excited about that. And we're also excited to talk about this movie today.
Yes.
What are we talking about today, Keith?
Today we're doing Star Trek 2009. We had already done previously Star Trek The Motion Picture, so you would think Wrath of Khan would be next, but because it's the 40th anniversary, and it's coming out in theaters here this September, I believe, we are going to hold off until then to do it.
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of fun to mix in these Kelvin timeline movies, because otherwise we'd be here for years before we got to them. So
right.
It'll be fun to talk about these as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're here again with the original crew of the I don't want to say original crew. So right. We're here again with our classic Enterprise crew from the original series. We have Kirk and Spock and Uhura and Sulu and all of our original crew. But as we'll learn, and as you probably already know, as we go throughout this, it's a different timeline than the one that the Prime Universe, I guess, that we're used to following through the original series and onward. Before we get into the plot lines of the story, I thought maybe we could talk about some of these actors that are coming in to reprise the roles of Kirk and Spock and Scotty and all this.
That sounds good.
So maybe just a couple at a time, we'll just kind of go through these actors. Why don't you go ahead and start us off?
All right. Well, the very first is Chris Pine as James T. Kirk. And this is one of Chris Pine's first roles. He did Wonder Woman after this and Jack Ryan after this and just about everything else that you could think of afterwards. It's other than, I think, Princess Diaries 2. That's the only thing I recognize him from for before it. But, yeah, so after this, his career kind of took off.
Yeah, and I think that's the case for most of these actors. They've become well-known since this.
Correct.
But at the time, they were kind of the unknowns.
Yes.
Or known for one or two little things.
Right. With a couple exceptions, yeah.
And then our next big spot to fill is Spock, of course. Up until this point, we haven't had any other Kirk or Spock. And so this was quite the deal. And Zachary Quinto was selected to be Spock. And at the time, I was surprised by that. I only knew him from Heroes, the TV show Heroes, as the bad guy, as Sylar. And so I thought, wow, him as Spock. But then when I started seeing the promos and in his uniform and with the ears and the eyebrows and all that, I'm like, well, wow, he does look pretty good as Spock.
This and actually was his first movie, too. He did a lot of TV shows, but this was the first time he did movies.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a pretty good deal for him.
Right?
Yeah, I'm sure he was nervous about it, but I guess him and Leonard Nimoy became really good friends throughout the shooting of this movie. That's pretty cool. Your first movie and you're working with a legend. That's pretty cool.
It is. We also have, to finish the Trinity, we have Carl Urban as Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy.
Yes.
And Carl Urban has been in several things. And he's always been kind of a side character or back character. But you never quite realize it's him. Because he's so good at just taking on whatever the role is.
Just kind of a chameleon.
Or yeah. Which is, you know, a testament to him, but also a pity because he's never quite had that breakout role.
Yeah.
But he's been even the lead in several movies and still hasn't had that. So this was just, again, true to form. Great job acting.
Yeah. No, I loved his performance in this movie.
Yes.
I think, I don't know if there's really a bad actor in the bunch.
No.
Let's see. Let's talk Uhura.
Yes.
We have Zoe Saldana playing Lieutenant Uhura. And I think her biggest thing by this point was Avatar as, I forgot her role in that, but.
Oh, I can't remember the name.
One of the blue people.
Yeah, she was the main. She was the main actress in it.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
So.
So that's the only thing I really knew her from or recognized her name from, but she comes off as a very different Uhura than what we're used to. Mm-hmm. But I think she owned that role and did a good job with that. So.
Absolutely. And then, arguably one of the biggest names of the movie, Simon Pegg as Montgomery Scotty Scott. I mean, I think he's always been kind of a little bit of a nerd, so I think it was an easy, he wanted to do it, and he wrote some of the later movies, so I know he's big and loves Star Trek, so I don't think it was much to get him to join on.
No, I think, yeah, he was a big part of Beyond, I think, so.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, he did.
Man, he nails it. He does a great job with that.
He does. Yep.
Maybe a little bit different choice was John Cho as Sulu.
Yes.
Because George Takei is a Japanese American, mm-hmm. and John Cho is a Korean American. And even though to a lot of people, they don't know the difference, but J.J. Abrams was a little concerned about that. And he contacted George Takei and said, I just want to make sure you're okay with this choice. And I guess he had a really cool conversation with George about Gene Roddenberry's vision of who Sulu was and that he just represented kind of the Pan-Asian culture. And right. he was down with that. And so he was very supportive of John Cho in that role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only thing that John had really been in was the Harold and Kumar movies, right?
I mean, that's his biggest thing for sure. That's what everybody would know him from.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know how successful you could call that, but I mean, he was in several other things before this, but it was all, you know, side characters Smaller. Or something like that. Other than the, I think two Harold and Kumars at this point.
Yeah. So yeah, I didn't know him at all. I hadn't seen those movies, so he was totally new for me, but I really liked what he did with Sulu.
Yes.
So, and then I think we have the last member of the crew, or the main member.
Yes. Anton Yelchin as Pavel Chekhov. And this really is the rookie of the crew. I mean, somebody I had definitely never seen before this. And, I mean, he has some credits before, but I don't recognize any of them. And, he's great. He was born in the Soviet Union, and he has the Russian. He even does the fake Russian accent that that was previously done. So, I mean, he did a really good job. Walter Koenig kind of made it up a little bit and did a few things, but Anton kind of took those on and added that in, but really just adds that youthful exuberance that Chekhov kind of has in the original series.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I wonder how his family felt about that. Did he have to prepare them and say, okay, I'm going to be doing this really weird Russian accent.
Right.
So don't be offended. Well, that's pretty cool to have him there as Chekhov. So.
It was. And then there was one other call out to an original crew member, but we don't even see her on screen. But we, at one point, Nurse Chapel is mentioned by Bones. So there's at least those call outs to the original series.
Yeah, that would have been kind of neat if they would have followed up with her on maybe the subsequent movies or something like that. But
right.
I don't think she ever appeared.
No.
And then, of course, we have Leonard Nimoy as our original Spock, and he's involved in this movie, and he's the Spock from the Prime Universe, is what we now call it. So it was neat to see him again. He hadn't been in a movie since Undiscovered Country, which... So yeah, it had been 18 years since he was in a Star Trek movie.
Wow.
You know, I know he was involved in some of the stuff with Next Generation and stuff like that, but as far as portraying Spock in a movie, it had been that long. It's pretty cool.
It is. Well, then we have the big villain, Captain Nero, is portrayed by Eric Bana, who at this point actually had made a name for himself. I mean, he was the Hulk
right
in the original Hulk movie there, and then he was in Black Hawk Down, and he was Hector in Troy. He was pretty well known at this point too.
Yeah, yeah. And almost unrecognizable, though, as
yeah.
As a Romulan, as Nero.
He really is.
And then to fill out kind of the main cast, we can talk about a couple of the other supporting. But, well, and really, Bruce Greenwood is supporting cast as Christopher Pike.
Right.
Who was the second commander of the Enterprise, or captain of the Enterprise. He shows up in this. You know, we hadn't seen him since
the
Menagerie back in the 60s. So it was kind of neat to see and hear about Christopher Pike again, since we hadn't heard about him for so long.
And then you do have Sarek there, Spock's father, played by Ben Cross. And Amanda Grayson is Spock's mother, played by Winona Ryder. The only other one was Deep Roy playing Kiesner, Scotty's assistant. He's there periodically on screen, at least.
That's true. So yeah, what a task for these guys to come in and replace William Shatner and
right
Leonard Nimoy and
beloved
DeForest Kelly, James Doohan, all these people that are classic Star Trek have been around for years and years and years and represented Star Trek.
Yeah.
And now these guys have to come in and say, okay, now I'm the Spock, I'm the Kirk.
Right.
Rish Outfield has another question for us. And again, I think his question applies to more. We can address it now that we're talking about the cast at the beginning of the episode rather than waiting. Yeah, let's hear what Rish has to say.
Hey, guys, this is Rish Outfield doing my traditional question after your episode for Star Trek 2009. I don't have anything really good for this one. So my question to you is, which of the actors, the recast actors, did you feel epitomized their character the best? Where you didn't have to force your brain to compensate for the new actor. You're just like, oh, that is blank. That, you know, that is the character I know and love. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I think, you know, we might have differing opinions on this, but the first thing that jumps to my mind is Carl Urban as Dr. McCoy. Just his mannerisms and his manner of speech, his accent and everything, I think he just nailed it. And it sounded and sometimes looked like DeForest Kelly was in the shot. Maybe not looked as much because he is a little bit bigger build, but man, he really got the voice down and the mannerisms and the temperament, I think, down for Bones. So that's the first thing that jumps to my mind.
Right. The sharpness of the tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's just, I mean, we call it the Trinity in Star Trek, usually between Spock, Kirk, and Bones, but Bones just didn't quite have as big a role as Spock and Kirk in these, in this movie especially, but I do think, I agree, yeah. I think Carl Urban is great at it. I needed more of him. Honestly, Zachary Quinto as Spock, to me, just, I thought he did a great job. I think he did the little bit of stillness that Leonard Nimoy sometimes did, where he stood very proper and with great posture and just didn't always move very much when delivering his lines. And it just, again, the mannerisms and the way he used his speech, and then would have emotional outbursts as well, which is something that Leonard Nimoy did. Yeah, I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then, you know, he's a younger Spock, but he's also, you know, it's a different timeline. And so he is more emotional than the Spock that we're used to. Yeah, those two, yeah, they really, I mean, right. I think Simon Pegg nails the the accent, you know, the Scottish accent. But he brings a different energy to it. He's really high energy, where James Doohan wasn't as much. You know, he'd get excitable and everything, but Simon Pegg just kind of brought it to a new level.
Right.
And then we talked about Anton Yelchin with, you know, being able to mimic that Russian accent as well. But again, it was kind of a different thing for him, so.
Right. Well, and Zoe Saldana did a great job. I think she kind of fit into the role really well, but there was more written for her than there was for Nichelle Nichols.
Yes.
I think. So it's a little bit different to see that too.
But she didn't sing.
No, she didn't sing. But she did talk and hang out with Nichelle Nichols. So,
oh, did she?
Yeah, okay. I think a lot of the cast that could did that with the originals. So that makes what Carl Urban did even more amazing, because DeForest Kelly, I think, was had passed before this.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
Yeah, 1999. So, I mean, that makes that even more impressive. And then the one that does stand out a little bit is John Cho as Sulu. I think he does a really good job, but I think also he did really well, and it does seem to play off in this pretty well. And
yeah.
You see a little bit more of the pilot Sulu, the one who gets left in charge when everybody else is gone, and the fencer as well.
Yes, we do get some of that in there. Yeah, and then Chris Pine as Kirk, I think I watched an interview with him. He made a conscious decision not to mimic William Shatner and try, you know, he tried to match the bravado and stuff like that, but not try to pause in his words, you know, like Shatner would have that same cadence. Because, and I agree with his decision, because I think it would have come off as mocking more so than these other ones that kind of were able to to mimic their predecessors.
I agree.
So yeah, that kind of rounds out the cast.
Yes.
Maybe we should get into the story of it.
All right.
And I guess we start off with another cast member that we haven't talked about. The opening scene of the movie is aboard the USS Kelvin, which is where we get the Kelvin timeline from. And, you know, it's also kind of an in thing with, I believe, one of J.J. Abrams's relatives was named Kelvin or something like that. So he's used that term a lot in some of his movies. So I think that's where that came from. But anyway, the first officer on board the USS Kelvin is George Kirk.
Yes.
James Kirk's father. And he's played by Chris Hemsworth, which, again, now he's a superstar. Right. But at the time, he was really a nobody.
So yeah.
It was his first moment to shine. So.
Yeah, this is 2 years before Thor, so.
Right. He was not the household name that he is today. And they're surveying a sun or something like that. I can't remember exactly what their mission is. But all of a sudden, this hole in space comes out, kind of this lightning storm that they see. this huge phenomenon, and they go to investigate, and this giant spacecraft comes through it. You know, almost looks like a squid or something like that, but it's all spaceship and made out of metal. And immediately, as it comes out of this wormhole or whatever it's coming through, it attacks. They send weapons and attack the Kelvin, and it gets through their shields and just starts tearing the ship apart, and they don't know how to defend themselves, and they start shooting back and everything, but it's obvious that they're going to lose. Well, the captain gets killed, and George becomes the new captain in charge, and it just so happens that his wife is on the ship, and she's going into labor with their first child, who will be James Kirk, and he orders everybody to get on the shuttlecraft and escape, or the escape pods, and get out of there. And he's planning to go with them until he learns that the autopilot won't work and that he's going to need to stay behind to keep this enemy ship occupied and try to destroy it in order for everybody else to get away.
Right.
And so he does this, and his son is born. He hears, he's able to talk to his wife and kind of a heartfelt conversation. And they talk about what's his name going to be. And they name him James Tiberius Kirk. Or I don't think they say Tiberius at the time, but how does that
go? It was, she said, why don't we name him after your father? And he goes, Tiberius? I don't think so. Let's name him after yours.
Right.
And so that's where the Tiberius came from. His dad, George's dad, was Tiberius. And so
yeah,
James is the mom's dad, so. And the mom is played by Jennifer Morrison, who was pretty big at the time for being in House and then went on to be in Once Upon a Time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So she was in between two pretty big hit TV shows.
And yeah, so unfortunately, George dies with the ship and crashes into this massive ship. And we learn later on that this ship is a Romulan mining vessel. And it's run by this Nero, and they're from the future. But of course, the Kelvin knew nothing about that. They just were attacked and they reacted, and everybody survived except for George Kirk. And so that's all we see of Kirk's parents at that point.
Then we fast forward about 10 years later, I think, and we see a car all of a sudden come screaming down a dirt road, and you hear like kind of a phone call, and there's a little kid driving the car, and it's a very young James Kirk, and his stepdad is giving him the phone call, and he's telling him, you better not hurt this car, there better not be a scratch, you better come back here. And as he's doing it, it's a classic muscle car from like the 1960s, right. 1970s. So, it's got to be super expensive then. But
in the 23rd century.
Right. So, he's driving it down the road and, you know, he tries to take off the top because it's convertible and it goes flying off. So, that's gone. And then, all of a sudden, a police officer in a hover bike starts chasing after him and telling him to pull over. And he runs away and you kind of see this kid who can barely see over the steering wheel is taking a cop for a heck of a chase. And then he pulls the Indiana Jones and jumps out of the car as it's flying over a cliff. And, of course, he's hanging at the edge of the cliff and is able to pull himself back up. And the police officer says, he's like, problem, officer? So we see the brashness and unwilling to follow rules that Kirk has at this time. And then we go and see Spock as a young child going and doing his lessons at school, and then a whole bunch of Vulcan children come over, and he's like, oh, are you here to try to harass me again? And they start talking about him, and they make fun of him, and they're trying to bully him, and then all of a sudden they start talking about his human mother and how that's a disadvantage, and it makes Spock go crazy, and he basically attacks one of the boys and starts beating the crud out of him,
right,
until his dad's able to...
They were successful in eliciting an emotional response.
Right. So you kind of find out what Spock's trigger is, and it's his human mother and his heritage a little bit. So you have these very similar, almost, outbursts that they chose to show between the two of them as they're growing up. Very emotional responses. And so then we flash forward till it's 17 years after Kelvin. So I guess about another 7 years or so, I would guess. And we see Spock standing before the Vulcan Science Academy board. And they're like, well, thanks to your disadvantage, you've got great marks. You've done all these things. So we're willing to accept you into the Vulcan Science Academy. And Spock goes, what do you mean disadvantage? They're like, well, your human mother, your ancestry. And he goes, I'm going to have to respectfully decline coming in. They're like, no Vulcan has ever turned us down. He's like, well, your record still stands intact. I am not all Vulcan. And they're like in shock a little bit. And his dad's just kind of staring at him as he turns and walks away. And it's again, you know, the Vulcan Science Academy said something basically disparaging about his mother.
Yeah. And you see that change in him, you know, because he's very logical and going along with everything. And then you can see the change.
Oh, yeah. It's very sudden. And subtle, but it's like a switch got flipped immediately.
And so. He gives a very sardonic live long and prosper to them before he leaves.
Yes.
Bordering on sarcasm.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. that trying to get that in there.
And then we go back and we catch up with Kirk. And I think we established before that he was in Iowa. And I don't know if he's still in Iowa or where he's at, but he's near a training school for Starfleet Academy or where all the cadets hang out or soon-to-be cadets or whatever that are going to enter Starfleet. And he's in a bar and he goes up and he hits on Uhura and, you know, wants to know her name and you know, just trying to buy her a drink and hit on her. And she's having nothing to do with it. Then a couple of Starfleet guys come up and, hey, is this guy giving you any trouble? And he's not going to back down. And so he takes on three of these guys and gets the crap beat out of them in the bar fight. The first of many beatings.
Yes.
In this movie. And
oh, man.
Then it ends up Captain Pike walks into the room and says, what's going on here? Everybody go home or whatever. And everybody clears out and leaves the bar. Later on, he talks to Kirk as he's, you know, recovering from his wounds or whatever. And he kind of talks to him. He says, hey, you know, I knew your father or I studied about your father. And I think you should apply at Starfleet. And he's like, are you kidding? I'm not Starfleet material. He tells him, he says, you know, your dad saved an entire starship in 8 minutes. You do better or something like that. And just kind of lays it down for him and gives him a challenge. Right. And then he leaves. And then that next morning, Kirk does show up at the spaceport or whatever, where everybody's taken off to go to Starfleet Academy.
Right.
And he gets in the transport and he's going to head off and Pike sees him there. And he's kind of happy to see that Kirk decided to join. Lo and behold, who sits next to him when he comes in the ship?
Well, Bones, because he got pulled out of the bathroom, so he didn't have to look in the window to go off into space. Because, as always, Bones doesn't like traveling in whatever method it is to travel, transporter or shuttlecraft or anything. He's always going to complain about it. And so he goes and he sits next to him and he introduces himself. He's like, don't you know about all the different ways that you can die from this? And he's like, well, if you hate space and flying so much, what are you doing leaving? He's like, well, in the divorce with my wife, she got the whole planet. So he's saying that. He's like, all I got left is my bones. And that's kind of where he got his nickname. And then they go off and you get that glorious... Is this the point where you see the glorious shot? No, not yet. That's coming up when they do Enterprise shot.
Oh yeah, I did forget to talk about after his conversation with Pike. Kirk goes off and stares out mm-hmm. into the shipyards where the Enterprise itself is being built on Earth, and it's kind of his twin looking out into the twin sun moment for Star Trek, where he's contemplating life and deciding what he right. wants to do, and that's why that's after that he shows up the next morning. And I remember that received a lot of controversy yes. at the time, because everybody knows that the Enterprise was built in space and Europa Space Station or whatever it was. But again, they're so smart in making this movie is they can explain everything by, yeah, but this is a different timeline. You know, maybe they're being more protective now and they're blah, right. blah, 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 blah. You know, they could come up with all kinds of excuses of why things are different than what we're used to in the regular canon of Star Trek. So then I think we get our final jump to the future, where we go pretty much to the end of Starfleet training. We have Kirk, who has faced the Kobayashi Maru and failed in the past, but he can't accept the failure, and so he keeps reapplying for the Kobayashi Maru. And he tells McCoy that this time it's going to be different. I want you to be there with me. Come on. And so he takes on the
right.
Kobayashi Maru.
Well, he shows up for the Kobayashi Maru, and he's not paying much attention as stuff's going on. He's just kind of sitting there. He's got an apple in his hand, and he's like tossing it back and forth. And they're like, oh, we need to – aren't you worried about this? And Bones is like, I'm so glad I'm here when you're not taking this serious. And he's like, oh, so many Vulcans or so many Klingon ships are here. And he's like, oh, really? It's like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to rescue everybody. And Uhura's like, okay, how are you going to do that? And he's like, just don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. And they keep on going through it. And then all of a sudden the power kind of fails for a second. And it comes back up and Kirk goes, huh, that's weird. He's like, all right, target all the Klingons and fire photon torpedoes. And Bones is like, well, their shields are still up. He's like, are they? And Bones turns back. He's like, no, they're not. And he's like, just make sure it's one torpedo per ship. We don't want to waste any ammo and stuff like that. So then they fire the torpedoes and blow up all the ships. And he's eating his apple and doing little pew, pew, pew guns at the stuff. And everybody's like, how in the world did he do this?
Yeah. And then we learn that Spock is the one who designed the Kobayashi Maru. And, you know, he's all in charge of that.
Right. Made it unbeatable.
Right. But, of course, at that point, Kirk is brought before the Starfleet board for discipline and a trial based on it. And, you know, he says, I want to face my accuser. And so then Spock comes out, and that's when we learn that he's the one that designed it. And right. he comes to testify against Kirk and, or at least explain, you know, what the Kobayashi Maru mm-hmm. is and what he did, that he cheated. He didn't take the test. And then Kirk was like, well, isn't the test itself a cheat? Because it's designed that you cannot win. And right. I don't believe in no-win scenarios, you know. And then Spock starts to debate and say, well, then you don't understand the underlying premise of the lesson that's supposed to be learned or whatever. And then they're interrupted. The trial is interrupted because there's a vessel that just showed up.
Right.
At Vulcan. And it's an emergency situation. They're sending all the ships from Starfleet to go attack this vessel. And of course, everybody is being assigned to their different ships. But Kirk is not able to go because he's under this discipline. And so he's not going to be assigned a ship at this time. But everybody else is scrambling. And as it would have it, most of our crew ends up on the Enterprise. So. Right.
Yeah, you have Uhura at first isn't assigned to the Enterprise, and she goes up to Spock and she says, am I not one of the best students? He's like, yes. She's like, so why am I not on the Enterprise? He's like, well, I didn't want to be accused of favoritism. She's like, I am on the Enterprise. And he looks at her and he goes, you are on the Enterprise. So she gets on it And then Chekov's already there. Sulu's already there. And we come up and it's Spock's going to be the first officer. Pike is the captain. And then Bones is going to be an assistant medical officer. And Kirk's just got to stay until Bones feels bad for him and goes and injects him with something. And he starts feeling bad. and Bones is like, takes him on the shuttle. He's like, oh, he's not authorized. He's like, yeah, unless it's because he's under the care of a doctor and I'm under the care of the doctor. And do you want to explain why his medical officer isn't there? And the guy's like, okay, get on. And so whatever Bones injected him with, the cure was worse. Since then he tried to cure him. And Kirk hears the description of what's going on, this lightning storm in space, and realizes what it is and is trying to go talk to the captain and warn them that it's Nero again in the Narada. And he's going through all these different side effects of all of a sudden he's got giant hands or his tongue starts going numb or right. He can't see. And Bones just keeps on treating him as he's trying to run and Bones is trying to treat him. And he's trying to talk to Uhura because she heard something about several Klingon ships destroyed by a lightning storm with Romulan language. And so they all end up on the bridge and it's just about to turn, you know, Kirk, what are you doing here? Kick him off the bridge when they actually listen to him for a second. He's like, no, listen, the lightning storm, it's the same as when I was born. You're about to run into a trap. You got to stop. You got to slow down. That's what this is. You know, Uhura heard these things happen. And so that's where they are.
Yeah. And she backs them up. And mm-hmm. they were actually behind all the other ships. Because right. when they went to take off from Starfleet Academy, from Earth or whatever, Sulu didn't take the parking brake off, so to speak.
Right.
And so they were delayed in going to warp with the rest of the vessel. So they were a little bit behind, which is fortunate.
Right.
Because they do come out of warp with shields up and they run into massive debris from all the other Federation starships
right.
that have been ripped apart by the Narada. And yeah. at the time, the Narada is a little bit distracted because they're assembling their drill structure over Vulcan.
Right.
And but then as soon as they're alerted to the Enterprise, Nero is like, the Enterprise? So he knows that Spock is on the Enterprise. And I guess this is probably a good time to update everybody on why is the Narada here in the first place? You know, what was going on?
Right.
And we did learn that they are from the future, that Romulus was destroyed by a star-going supernova. But our Spock, the prime Spock, you know, years after Nemesis and all that, he had found a way to create a singularity using this red matter, which is interesting. It's never really been explained what red matter is or where it came from. But with this red matter, they can create a singularity. And so he's going to inject this into the sun and implode the sun before it can destroy Romulus. But he's too late in getting there, and Romulus is destroyed. And the Narada was out on a mission, a mining mission. And so they lost their entire planet and all their families and everything. And Nero holds Spock personally responsible for this. And so he's chasing Spock right around when this singularity is happening. And so both vessels get pulled into the singularity of this sun being imploded. And it actually becomes, you know, a portal back in time. And that's why Nero's ship arrived
right.
back with the Kelvin and all that happened. But for some reason, some timey-wimey wormhole reasons, Spock's ship didn't come through for 25 years after Nero's ship did.
Right.
And so Nero's just been hanging out, I guess, for 25 years waiting for Spock to appear so he can finish his retribution on Spock. So now we're at Vulcan. They're assembling their drill and drilling into the planet. Meanwhile, the Enterprise is quickly subdued by the Narada, and just like he did with the Kelvin, he asks for Captain Pike to take a shuttlecraft and come aboard the Narada.
Yes. So Pike basically, yeah, says, Spock, your captain, and I'm going to go over and we're going to have three people to do a space jump. And who has combat training? Sulu's like, I do. He's like, okay, you, Kirk, you're not supposed to be here anyway, so you got to come. And then he gets Chief Engineer Olson to come along as well. And as they're walking to the shuttle, he's talking with Spock and Kirk, and he's like, all right, Spock, you're in charge. Kirk, you're first officer. And Kirk gets like a little smug fit look on his face when that happens. And Spock looks a little put aback. But then he's like, okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to fly over there and you three are going to drop out of the shuttlecraft and you're going to have to do
a space dive,
fly down this drill and use these explosives and blow it up. And so Pike goes flying over and, you know, he gets taken by Nero and basically tortured with a weird little worm thing that he's going to have to tell everything. All the Earth defense codes for, and it's kind of like similar to the worms from Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, I think it that where they were referencing those same creatures, which.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So then you've got Kirk, Sulu, and Olson all flying down in their differently colored spacesuits, each of them conveniently blue, red, and yellow.
Right.
And Olsen's the one with the bombs on him, and as they go down, Sulu pulls his chute first as soon as it's safe enough, and then Kirk waits a little bit and pulls his, and Olsen's like, no, not yet. They're like, pull it, no, not yet. And he waits till the last minute, lands hard, his chute gets sucked under the drill, and he follows with it, and he gets basically into the giant drill's energy beam and disintegrated.
Right.
So, the red shirt Chief Engineer Olson is gone.
With the explosives. And
with the explosives. So then Kirk and Sulu are like, well, what do we do now? And conveniently right then, some Romulans who are in the drill pop out and they start a fight. And it's close combat and they're all fighting hand to hand. And Kirk's just basically getting beat up again. Punched this way and that way and flying over here. And he's just getting beat up, and Sulu's holding his own and has this really cool, like, collapsible sword that he extends, and he fights the Romulan and is able to defeat that one. And then right as it looks like Kirk's about to die, Sulu is able to save him by defeating the other Romulan and pulls Kirk up and saves him. And then he's like, well, what are we going to do now? And Kirk's like this and grabs one of the guns and starts shooting the drill until it basically stops.
Right.
And then because Sulu landed differently, he had to cut off his chute. So he kind of falls off the platform and Kirk jumps after him. And they're like, we need to get teleported out of here. And they're falling to their really fast to the ground. And nobody knows how to do them and lock onto them very well. And Chekov's like, I know how to do this. And jumps up and runs to the transporter room and does the calculations and is able to teleport him right before they're hit the ground.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because that was the thing, is because the drill platform was going, it was disrupting all transporter, all communications with the planet,
yep,
all that kind of stuff. So until they destroyed it, they were out of contact and could not beam anybody anywhere. Right.
They couldn't tell anybody what's going on or beam anybody.
Right.
And then Spock went down to the planet to try and save the Vulcan High Council and his parents. And he's pretty successful. He gets them all out of where they were.
The cave or whatever.
Yeah, some holy site. And they're getting outside so they could be transported. And they all get outside. And unfortunately, Spock's mom is just a little bit too far away. And right as they're transporting, the ground falls beneath her feet, and she slides off and dies, basically. And so they weren't able to save her.
Right.
So Winona Ryder, yeah, I mean, she wasn't on screen for very long, but it was kind of neat to see her. And you could just see she, like, stares right at Spock and reaches for him almost as she falls away.
Yeah.
Then the Narada just moves on to Earth with the Earth defense codes being unlocked, and Spock decides to go to the rest, join the rest of the fleet and not go after the Narada. And Kirk is like yelling at him and fighting with him over it, and actually gets into a fight with him again. And
well, he has security remove him from the bridge, but then Kirk starts fighting security. And then Spock shows up with a handy neck pinch to knock him out.
Right. And then he says, get him off my ship.
Yep.
So they put him in a little escape pod and shoot him down to Delta Vega.
Yeah. Which in the original series, Delta Vega is where they took Gary Mitchell from where no man has gone before. So I don't think it's the same planet, but it was kind of neat that they named it the same. Is that
right?
Yeah. So yeah, Kirk gets transported down to that planet in the little shuttle pod, and it lands or crashes or whatever. But it's like an ice planet, a snow planet, and he does have some gear, some winter attire or whatever. But and he learns that there is a structure nearby where he can go to, and so he's hiking toward this structure to try to get to civilization or whatever amount of it there is on this planet. And then he gets attacked by a walrus, huge walrus type creature. And as he's evading that, that gets attacked and eaten by another creature that also comes after Kirk. And so he's falling down cliffs and running through the snow to try to get away from this creature, and eventually finds a cave and gets down deep into the cave. But the monster's still kind of crashing through and getting at him until it's scared away or chased away with some fire from somebody else. And it turns out that it's somebody that we know.
Yes. Original Prime Spock.
Right.
And he recognizes Kirk right away. He's like, oh, Captain, you are the captain. And he's like, why do you keep calling me that? He's like, I am and always will be your friend. He's like, who are you? He's like, I'm Spock. He's like, we're not friends. And so Spock kind of tells Kirk what happened and why the Romulans did it and why they stranded him here. So then both Spock and Kirk, Spock's like, you need to get back there. You need to be the captain. Young Spock has been, he's not thinking the way he should. He's not being logical. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, how am I supposed to make him be emotionally
compromised?
Compromised. That's it. Compromised. Thank you. And he's like, I just lost my mother and my planet and several million of my species, people. I am emotionally compromised. And so he's like, okay, so I just got to do that. He's like, but how am I going to get there? And he's like, well, let's go to the site, the Starfleet site. And so they go there, and the outpost happens to be manned by Montgomery Scotty Scott.
Yes.
And Scotty, you know, has a transporter on there, and Spock and him start talking about his transbeam system, allowing him to transport, you know, long distances, and even if something's moving and it's in warp, and how to do that. And he's like, oh, I don't have the formula for that. And Spock types in some things. He's like, Scotty goes, what's this? He's like, it's your formula for this. And so it's almost a callback to Star Trek IV, where
is that the one with the whales?
That's the one with the whales. And he kind of does that to make the plastisteel walls for for station ops. So, but yeah, no, it's kind of this a throwback to that, where he's like, well, maybe this is the guy who came up with the formula. Let's just give it to him. And it's kind of like that. So they're Scotty and Kirk are then able to transport onto the Enterprise, and Kirk gets there just fine, and Scotty gets transported into like a water coolant system. And so Kirk's trying to help him escape that. And as he does, he has to, you see Scotty going through several tubes, and he's about to hit a big turbine and die. And Kirk's able to release the water and help him get out, but that sets off an alarm, and Spock sees through the cameras that's Kirk. And so he's like, go get them. And security grabs him and brings him back. He's like, how did you get here? And Kirk's like, I'm not telling you. And he looks at Scotty. He's like, how did you get here? You're a Starfleet officer. And Sky's like, I don't want to pick sides.
Yeah.
And so Kirk provokes Spock into realizing that he is emotionally compromised. And Spock attacks him. And once again, Kirk's getting beat up.
And choked.
But they're able to stop him. And choked, yeah. And they're able to finally get him off. And Spock tells Bones, he's like, I'm relinquishing command. I'm not fit. I'm emotionally compromised. And Bones is like, just great. Now we don't have a captain and a first officer. And Sulu's like, and Bones is like, what? Sulu goes, Pike made him first officer. And Kirk goes smugly over to the captain's chair and lounges with the biggest smug grin on his face, just sitting there looking happy. He's like, all right, let's go after him. Let's go to Earth straight away.
Yeah, the thing I like about that scene is Spock knows it at that point that he's out of control, and everybody else on that bridge knows that he's compromised.
Right.
I thought they did that part really well, the emotions that he felt, and I don't think Kirk enjoyed doing that, but he knew that he needed to do that.
Right.
And then, of course, Scotty comes in with his, I like this ship. It's exciting.
It's exciting.
Kind of the tension breaker there. So
right. Funny. Well, and conveniently, they don't have a chief engineer, so Scotty's able to step into that role.
There you go. Yeah, there is a lot of convenience to this movie, you know, and I know a lot of people complain about that, but I've always kind of chalked it up to the timeline is trying to repair itself in some way, and so that's why all these people are put in place. You know, Scotty just happens to be on that planet and just, so now he's on the ship with everybody else and things like that. But
right.
I can justify that in my own head. So,
oh, yeah.
I agree. I don't worry about that too much.
No. Then where are we? Spock goes and talks to his father and he eventually decides to come back and help Kirk.
Yeah. They're trying to come up with a plan. How are we going to defeat them? Or, you know, they're going to see us coming. And then I think it's Sulu that says, well, actually, the rings of Saturn can disrupt sensors. And if we are able to come out of warp just at the right point, just at the right time on the other side of Saturn, they won't be able to see us coming.
Yep.
And they're kind of questioning what kind of credentials he has to come up with that theory or whatever. But then Spock shows up and says, actually, his observations are correct. That'll work.
Right.
So that's what they do. They're going after the Narada again before it can destroy Earth just as it did Vulcan.
Right. And it's right before the drill gets dropped. And so they're able to teleport Spock and Kirk onto the Narada. And it's supposed to be an empty spot that they go to, but actually it's full of a lot of Romulans. And so...
yeah, Scotty's best laid plans didn't work.
Right. So they have to get through a little bit of a fight and they're able to do that. And so Kirk's going to go save Pike and Spock's supposed to get into the vessel and stop them with the Prime Universe of Spock's vessel.
With the red matter.
Right. With the red matter. As they enter onto that vessel, it says, welcome back, Ambassador Spock. And Spock goes, you're hiding something from me. And Kirk's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Because he's such a bad liar. But Spock is ready to take off. And so he goes and he destroys the drill and then is getting Nero's attention focused on him and flies away from Earth. And Nero realizes it's Spock and chases after him. And in the meantime, Kirk's fighting to release Pike, and Nero and his first officer-ish type of person, Ale,
yeah,
who's always there but doesn't even really say anything. They get in a fight, and as Kirk's about to go after Nero, Ale blindsides him and knocks him down and
beats him up.
Beats him up again. So this is yet again Kirk taking another beating physically, and as he's being held up with one arm and choked and told, you're so weak, your species is so weak, I thought you'd put up a better fight. Kirk's like trying to say something and he's like, you can't even say the words. And Kirk tries saying it again, and finally he releases him enough they can talk, and Kirk says, "Got your gun," and then shoots him.
Right.
And that's how he won the fight. So Kirk is able to go over, release Captain Pike, and then they're able to get teleported back to the Enterprise. And then Spock is able to go through, and he's going head-to-head against Nero. And Nero fires a whole bunch of missiles, and they're all definitely going to detonate and blow up Spock and the ship. Except the Enterprise comes flying out at the last minute and shoots all those missiles down because it was in the dust cloud. So it was able to do that, and Spock was able to basically ram the jellyfish ship right into the Narada, and it detonates the red matter when he does it. And right before that happens, they're able to teleport him out. So now Kirk and Spock are back on the bridge, and the Narada is getting destroyed by the red matter, and it's creating a black hole. Kirk contacts them through comms and says, you know, "Hey, You're about to go in there. We're willing to accept you and help. Just say the word and we'll beam anybody who needs help on here." And Spock's like, "Wait a minute." What pulls him aside? He's like, "What are you offering?" He's like, "Well, I thought it would be the logical move because then maybe we could make peace with Romulus too based on this. Don't you agree?" And Spock goes, "Not this time."
Yeah.
So, luckily, Nero says, "No, we're always going to fight. We're not going to accept anything from you." And Kirk goes, "Okay, very well," and stops it and just fires everything at the Narada, and it all blows up and goes further into the hole. And unfortunately, the Enterprise is caught in the black hole too and is being sucked in, even though they're moving at full warp away from it. They're starting to go into the black hole some.
Yep, they waited just a little bit too long.
Right? So Kirk's like, "What? Anybody have any ideas?" And Scotty's like, "Well, if we eject all the warp cores and they explode, maybe the blast will push us away enough that we can escape." And so that's what they do. And
if all else fails, eject the core.
Right? It amazingly works. And so they do that and they get out.
I was impressed. Because, you know, most ships that we're familiar with only have one warp core.
Right. But
this ship had, like, what would you say, like 6 or 7 or something like that?
Something like that. It was several. Just doom, 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 all getting shot out.
And I guess this Enterprise is much larger in scope than the Enterprise that we know as well. So,
right.
It's just interesting, all these little changes from the timeline shift. Yeah.
Oh, it's a pretty ship, though. I like it.
It is.
I really do like it.
And bright, with a bunch of lens flares.
Right? Oh, the lens flares. It's the opposite of DC. Instead of it's too dark to see anything, it's almost too bright sometimes to see what's going on. So
yeah, this was where J.J. Abrams became famous for his lens flares.
Yeah. Well, he toned it down after this. He took the criticism to heart.
Yeah.
So, well, then that pretty much ended everything in the conflict. So then they go back to Earth, and Kirk is promoted to captain and given command of the Enterprise. Pike is rear admiral and in a wheelchair now. Spock actually meets with old Spock.
Yeah.
And he's ready to quit and just go help rebuild the Vulcan race. And old Spock's like, "No, that's my job. For once, follow your heart. Do what feels right instead of what's logical."
Yeah.
He's like, I will take care of our people. You take care of this. And so Spock decides to remain in Starfleet and actually goes on to the Enterprise and says, I see your first officer spot isn't still filled. I'd like to take it." And so then the Enterprise goes to warp, and Elder Spock speaks the "where no one has gone before" monologue.
Yeah, which was another great send-off for Leonard Nimoy, is to have him give that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we're all set in place. Everybody's where they should be. The Enterprise is out there on a mission, and Kirk's the captain, and everybody's set up in place. So,
right.
I mean, we take it for granted, but at the time, I mean, this was a pretty big deal.
Oh yeah.
I think, you know, we talked about all the actors being brand new, but this was J.J. Abrams' first movie as well.
Yes.
You know, he's done many since, but before that he was known for Lost and
Felicity?
Yeah, Felicity. Wasn't that the name Fringe, of it? And what was the
Alias?
One the spy? Yeah, Alias. And so he had was kind of the
a TV director.
Originators, creators of those shows, but this was his first feature film. So kudos to him for that with all the lens flares and all the things that, I mean, I think he did it, him and his team, because he worked with Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman, who is now like the huge, the main producer of all the new Star Trek stuff is Alex Kurtzman. And they were big Star Trek fans. But J.J. Abrams was more of a Star Wars fan. And so some people say, oh, he tried to make Star Trek like Star Wars. And to a certain extent, that's true. But I think they were very honorific of Star Trek and what had come before. They weren't just taking everything for granted.
No, no. And I mean, the movies always were a little bit more exciting and Hollywooded anyways, for the most part.
Yeah.
More than the TV show for sure. So, I mean, they were a little more Star Wars-y themselves.
They were, you know, especially after Wrath of Khan.
Right.
Know, last time we talked about Star Trek the Motion Picture, which was a little bit more of a thinking movie and a little bit slower and more concept than action.
Yeah.
As we'll see, you know, with Wrath of Khan, that kind of changed everything.
Yes.
But yeah, one of the coolest nods to the original Star Trek was the ending credit music, which went back to the opening theme song of the, I mean, it was a redone, but it was the opening music for the original series, which was really, I remember being in the theater and just thinking how cool that was and how neat that they did that and everything. So,
well, and the music during the film, I mean, there's like this theme that goes throughout it. And I mean, it constantly builds and it's very good.
Yeah. The new Star Trek theme was amazing.
Yeah.
And that was,
and it,
Michael Giacchino did that.
Yeah.
And
it was great. And it swelled at just all the right parts of the movie and it really brought it together. And it did feel like there was a theme building throughout the whole thing. It was nice.
It was. And we forgot to mention it earlier, but we've talked about it offline. Is how neither of us realized that Sabotage from the Beastie Boys was in this movie as well as Star Trek Beyond. I always associate it with the third movie in this series, but it was here in the beginning. So
yeah, when young Kirk is stealing the car, that's what's playing on the car as he's driving away. And it's from almost the beginning of Kirk to Beyond being like the end of when we saw this Kirk.
Yeah.
It bookends it a little bit.
Which, you know, initially feels out of place. But then when you think about Star Trek, I mean, they're always quoting Shakespeare and they're always doing, you know, all this old stuff that, you know, you wouldn't think would be in the 23rd or 24th century. But it's so good that, of course, it's stuck around that long. So why not the Beastie Boys? I guess, is there anything else you wanted to talk about on this movie?
The movie was dedicated to Gene Roddenberry and Majel Barrett.
Oh, very cool.
She had finished the line. She was the role of the voice of the Enterprise's computer. And she finished her lines 2 weeks before she died for this film.
Wow.
So it was nice to have her in there. And she was part of this,
yeah. But
then they dedicated it to her and Gene.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So there you have it. That's Star Trek 2009. And yeah, I mean, this totally revitalized the franchise. You know, because it had been laying dormant there for quite a few years after Nemesis. Yes. You know, that Nemesis was kind of the last nail in the coffin, and it didn't do very well at the box office. I liked it better than most. I think you liked it too.
Yeah, I like it.
But it the franchise was definitely winding down, and then Enterprise went off the air and there was no Star Trek for a long time. And this was the first time we had seen Star Trek for a while. So,
right.
You know, probably for 5, 6, 7 years in there.
At least. And so
it does a great job of bridging the gap too. You know, I think for the most part, all the old fans liked it and enjoyed it. And then you got all these new young people that this was their first Star Trek experience and they loved it too. So, yeah, it really did kick everything off again.
And it's the first Star Trek film to win an Academy Award, winning for Best Makeup.
For Best Makeup, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's our next movie. Next time we get together to talk about a movie, it will be The Wrath of Khan.
Yes.
And I have an arrangement with Rish Outfield that he'll join us to talk about that episode. We'll hit that from three different angles next time we talk about a movie. But
great.
Hey everybody, this is Marshall Latham coming in after Keith and I had recorded this episode. Sorry to drop in on you like this, but a few days after we had recorded this episode, I got a tweet from Keith where they had announced that they are working on a new Star Trek movie to come out in December of 2023. And they're making the effort right now to reunite the original cast of the Kelvin movies from Star Trek 2009. So we're talking Chris Pine, we're talking Zachary Quinto, we're talking Zoe Saldana, John Cho, Carl Urban, Simon Pegg. They're trying to get all those people to come back for a new Kelvin timeline movie. And that's exciting. It is sad, though, that Anton Yelchin has passed away. And so we won't have a checkoff in this next movie. But it's exciting that they're focusing on a new movie, that it's not just TV where they're revitalizing Star Trek, but on the big screen as well. So that's pretty cool. I just wanted to read this quick little blurb. So it'll be produced by J.J. Abrams, you know, Bad Robot, all that kind of stuff. And Mark Shakeman, I think is how you pronounce his name, who was the director of WandaVision, so that's encouraging, is going to be the director of the film. But here's what J.J. Abrams had to say. He says, "We are thrilled to say that we are hard at work on a new Star Trek film that will be shooting by the end of the year that will be featuring our original cast and some new characters that I think are going to be really fun and exciting and help take Star Trek into areas that you've just never seen before. We're thrilled about this film. We have a bunch of other stories that we're talking about that we think will be really exciting. So we can't wait for you to see what we're cooking up. But until then, live long and prosper." So that's pretty cool. I didn't want to put out this episode without updating you with that news. You've probably already heard it, but it's right in line with what Keith and I are talking about with Star Trek from 2009. Which is the beginning of the Kelvin timeline universe of Star Trek. All right, back to the show for the close-up.
In the meantime, I encourage everybody who's hearing this on the main feed, if you're enjoying these movie episodes, I think you definitely enjoy the series episodes that we do. Like I said, we're going through every series a half a season at a time, and we're just going around, and then we'll start over again. And there's new shows starting up, and so we're adding things to the docket. So we're talking about new stuff, we're talking about old stuff, and it's a lot of fun. And I encourage you to go over to Patreon and join at the $3 level, and so you'll get all of these Star Trek episodes.
Yes.
The way to get there is to go to patreon.com/journeyinto. And check out all the different tiers that you can join. If you do want to contact us, you can email us at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to be on the voicemail line and leave us a message there, you can go to 77JInto107. We'd love to hear from you. And I guess until we get together to talk about the next thing, Keith, live long and prosper.
Peace and long life, Marshall.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
This particular episode of Trekkin' was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which means that you can share it with as many people as you would like, but you cannot change it or sell it. And please let people know where you got it from.
So it was neat to see him again. He hadn't been in a movie since Undiscovered Country, which it's probably, I didn't do the math this time, but.
Oh.
Let me look that up real quick.
What was it? 6 was the last one, right?
I had it all queued up last time. 1991 was Undiscovered Country. So, yeah, he hadn't done it in 8 years. Or would that be 9 years? No, 10 years, 11 years. It had been a decade since he had been in a Star Wars, Star Trek movie. So,
no, 18. Right? 91 to 2009. Yeah, 18 years.
Okay, let me start that over again.